Hello there, and welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network. I'm Tucky, and today I am joined by Mark and Rob.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello, guys.
I just have this...
I don't like doing normal voice.
Yes, we're part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, so we'll give you more information about what we do later on in the show. But starting off with a slight change to the normal routine.
Everything's been a change to the normal routine. We're finding ourselves. We're finding something comfortable.
I'm not sure what to do. I'm not sure what to say to that because my brain went to German art house cinema for some reason when you said that.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Normally we do the featured anime later on in the show, but we're actually going to start with it this week because we've got some interesting things to talk about, and they do lead us into our main discussion point for the day. So do you want to lead us in, Mark?
Yeah, so after a few weeks ago, you might remember I watched all of Little Busters, and I enjoyed it to an extent.
careful words there.
So, past few days I've been watching Little Busters Refrain, which is season 2 of it. And if Little Busters was Ghostbusters, Little Busters season 2 is Groundhog Day. We're going to keep with Bill Murray here because the guy actually does basically become Bill Murray at some point.
Hang on,
you will understand.
I just had this mental image of just a live-action Bill Murray in an anime series about high school kids.
I was going to say, stick his character from Where the Buffalo Roams into there.
So, Little Busters Refrain Season 2 literally picks up from where the first one ended. So, Ricky... which is the main character, has been collecting... This is going to sound really awkward. Has been collecting girls for his baseball team.
Okay.
And over the course of the first season, he's been helping them come to grips with death, their own existence, and even just being happy with themselves. And this literally just continues on. It's nothing. It's not like a season 2 where you kind of have a little bit of build-up. It literally just starts with the final girl. And yeah, overall, the series is a bit weird. They really ramp things up this time. Whereas last time it was a 24-episode series, this is only 13 episodes. So they do cut things like it's literally this happens, then this happens, then this happens, as opposed to this happens, then not much happens for a few episodes. So first off, he ends up trapped in a kind of Groundhog Day situation with one of his friends, who I can't remember the name of, but she kind of looks after him over this day, and he keeps repeating it for some reason. I couldn't really understand why until a lot later on. Basically, he's led to repeat the same days over and over again because there's supposed to be a great, huge event coming up that is going to completely change the whole of his life. And they alluded to this in the first series, but they kind of didn't really go into it. And it also brings up more about Ricky's like amnesia, how he keeps forgetting things that he should know. And this is brought up where he starts forgetting some of the characters. So yeah, that continues for like the first few episodes. They focus on one character. Then after that, they kind of do all of the main cast. They go into a little bit of the backstory, explaining who all of the characters are, a little bit more than what we got in the first season. And then about episode 10, they completely turn everything that you've seen so far in the series on its head. If I had some criticisms, it kind of feels like the way the first series and the first half of the second series was formatted, they kind of go more deeper into some of these girls. Yeah, and that sounds wrong. Like they go into the backstories and stuff like that. But then, like probably about 4 or 5 episodes into season 2, all of those characters just disappear. literally they're just not mentioned. We don't know what happens to them for a few, and that happens for about 4 or 5 episodes, where it's literally just the main characters, the original team of Little Busters, and then it's explained that something happened on this camping trip, and all of the characters, including all of the girls that he's made friends with, and all of his childhood friends, are apparently dead. And then they do a little bit of time travel, and now he's got to try and help save them from this catastrophe before his entire life kind of becomes nothing, because for some reason he's trapped in this Groundhog Day type thing.
So he's stuck in a time loop, having to save all the girls.
Well, it's not just girls, it's boys as well. But it's kind of like he's trapped in his own little private world by his friends. They wish that, because he was like still alive and one of the other girls was kind of still alive, their dying wish was to make sure that they stayed alive. And somehow they trapped them in this weird bubble reality without him realizing what was going on. And then because the bubble's about to burst and everything's going to disappear, he learns the truth, and then he's got to go back to try and save all of his friends from the big catastrophe that kills them all off.
So hang on, is this all still Little Busters then?
This is all season 2 of Little Busters.
Right, so this is completely separate from season 1?
No, it's literally just continued on. The continued, like, the first season was him just meeting up these different girls. Season 2 is he meets the sixth girl, or he gets more involved with the sixth girl, and then we discover that the bubble world is going to burst, and then all the girls just disappear. It's really difficult to actually explain what actually goes on, because the first one was quite simple in how they kind of just went, yeah, this is this character, this is their backstory, this is what happens to them, this is how Ricky resolved it. And that continues on for pretty much all of the first season. Then season 2 comes and they do that for the first half of it with the final girl they didn't focus on in the first season. Mm. And then they just go, right, we're going to get rid of all of them girls, and then we're going to focus on these 5 main characters who we've seen in the original for the entire first season. And then at the very end, last 3 or 4 episodes, we're going to change everything. We're going to shove all of this backstory, we're going to explain everything that's gone on. And that's it. After the end, they don't have like a swimsuit episode or something like that. But there is over here, so there's probably more. So yeah, it's kind of like, it is kind of all over the place. It wasn't bad. It just felt kind of confusing. I was just kind of watching. I was just like, okay, what's going on here? Why is all these characters just disappeared?
Was it directed by M. Night Shyamalan?
No. Well, it's based on a visual novel game.
I've got to ask. Did they get confused with which visual novel it was based on and somehow accidentally started basing it on Steins Gate instead of Little Busters? Because Possibly. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like they were going, oh yeah, we've got Little Busters here. We've got the visual novel. We've got to work our way through. But then someone switched visual novels partway through.
Well, it feels like the kind of, for the first season with the visual novel, they kind of just focused on all of the romance options.
Yeah.
Apart from they didn't add the romance.
You see what I mean? They switched visual novels halfway through.
And then at the end, they kind of just went, yeah, we need to have this overall plot. We'll put this in the last 3 to 4 episodes.
Unless someone's done a sneaky Groundhog Day visual novel that the world doesn't know about.
A fanfic of Groundhog Day.
Yeah, with Bill Murray as the main character.
The guy is literally just Bill Murray.
Anime Bill Murray is just, it just works on every level.
Do you not think Bill Murray would run into a bus to save his friends?
No. He'd let them get slimed. You know he'd let them get slimed. They let him get slimed, it's only fair.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah, Little Busters, it was a decent series. I mean, I enjoyed it for a while. I just kind of felt it wasn't really focused on the overall story, and it kind of just went all over the place. I feel like if they had some allusions to what the final twist was from the first half of the season, I probably would have enjoyed it a little bit more.
It was a melon. That's what
it was. A melon. That was the twist.
They were twisting the melon man.
No. Terrible, man.
To be honest, the best thing about it is that one of the major gripes I had with the first season was how odd the dub was, in that some of the characters just sounded completely stupid. But they kind of fixed that. They had the Greg Ayers character sound like an adult Greg Ayers rather than just these little high schooler Greg Ayers, because he's supposed to be the big tough guy, and it's kind of like giving him a little squeaky childish voice just didn't work. But they fixed that in the second one.
See, this is the thing.
A lot of the girls with who had the annoying accents and stuff like that, like you say, they disappeared halfway through the season, so it's kind of, yeah, we didn't have bad, annoying girls.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Having met Greg Ayers, I just can't imagine him at all, ever, as the big tough guy, because he's adorable.
Well, this is the big tough guy who everybody likes. He's probably the character, he's supposed to be like the comic relief type character.
Yeah.
The big tough guy who always gets into scrapes, but always ends up being like beaten up himself, or who's always got your back and stuff like that. And his, when they actually go to his backstory, it is actually one of the better ones they do, because it's like he acts tough because that's the only way he knows how to act. He was always picked on when he was younger, and the only way he knew how to react to that was to fight back.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he actually discovered true friends when he realized that he didn't have to fight back as much. And yeah, it really worked. It was, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain. I mean, it was a decent enough series. It was one of the better ones I've watched as of late, but it felt so unfocused considering how had the first season, and then they went on to season two by completely changing things halfway through.
Okay. So, that was Little Busters then?
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell, it was a lot of fun, but so unfocused.
Okay, who's next?
Me. come back to me now. Come, gather round, children, and I shall tell you a tale. I have watched the movie Yu-Gi-Oh! Dark Side of Dimensions.
Okay.
Easy now.
So, are we talking dimensions as in, like, reality space dimensions? Are we talking dimensions as in, you know, XYZ?
Kind of the, sort of like life after life, kind of that kind of dimensions, because there was always, like, the shadow realm and whatnot. But this is more of, I don't know, life, death. You'll, at the end of it, at the end of the movie, you'll be like, oh, so that's why it's called that. But going to start off with a big spoiler alert. It was out on the big screen, so if you missed it, tough, because every Yugi fan went out there and saw it on the big screen. So back to Yugi, and this movie is what I'm going to refer to as extra pulp. Basically, the franchise for the whole original Yu-Gi-Oh was this tall, juicy glass of wheat punch, which we all drank down at some point, and to some extent
we've enjoyed. No, we didn't all drink it down at some point. I never bought into it.
Well, you're just one of them juice hipsters then, ain't you?
No, it's just Yu-Gi-Oh! When it started, I was too old to buy into it.
Nah, well, I wasn't.
See,
so,
yeah, there's good
age-appropriate wave juice.
Yeah, age-appropriate wave juice, I think. That's all I'm saying, is just a slight tweak on what you were saying.
So, if we've all at some point partook in Yu-Gi-Oh! It sounds like one of them legal drugs now. It does. If you ever try to play the card game, Jesus. So at the end of the whole facade was Yugi and the Pharaoh went their separate ways, and we all had to move on with our depressing lives. However, Konami have looked at this empty glass and decided, we'll try and scrape that leftover pulp right in the bottom of this glass. And so we come to this movie.
And that leftover pulp by now would have been cheese, wouldn't it?
Eh?
That leftover.
No, it's not so much a dairy residue. It's more of, you know, when you go to a shop and you've got the diluted tropical juice. This mostly happens with Robinson's, and you get that, like, the thick concentrate at the bottom.
The
like,
funk.
You know it's wet, but it looks crusty at the same time.
Yeah, the squash funk, as I call it.
So this is the weeb squash funk. And basically, Konami's literally had to scrape the barrel to get this stuff out and put it all under a DVD/movie screen, and we have Dark Side of Dimensions.
See, I've just got a mental image now of a studio executive with a glass and a spoon.
Sitting there with a dark magician card going, we need to squeeze it all as much as we can.
Get every last salty drop of Yugi out. So let's just get some points out of the way first. The animation, it's had that extra big budget razzmatazz, as you'd expect. There's more developed backgrounds, crisper character designs, and that extra CG oomph of the dual monsters. With the dual monsters too, some interesting new designs and monsters, and even some new magical girl monsters. Because, you know, the creative process was them thinking up was just some bloke staring intently at a fruit ball in the office meeting room and going, all right, lads and lasses, we need some extra waifu for those fans. So we're adding two new magical girl monsters. What should we call them? And that one bloke, Zeus, just panicked because he wasn't paying attention. He's looked at the fruit ball and went, you know what? We'll have an apple girl and a lemon girl. And so we've got the apple and lemon magical girls, which no way in shape or form actually like appeared in any of the previous ones. It's just there.
This is almost as if they needed to create some new Yu-Gi-Oh cards to sell to us.
Yeah, almost. It's like they have this brand or something that they're trying to pass off.
Yeah. We're on to Konami. We know what's going on.
I'm just confused as to how a magical girl can suddenly be a monster. That puts Pretty Cure in a totally different light.
Well, the thing is, it's like the thought process is like, oh, we've got Dark Magician. He's the badass card. Yugi loves him because he can relate, because he's also a deep brooding dark magician. And so from that, they're like, but what about female fans? Well, Dark Magician Girl. It's like Dark Magician with breasts. Way, sell cards. Where there was scraping the barrel here. It's like, oh, apple magical girl, lemon magical girl. So who both can summon the Dark Magician Girl. Yay!
So hang on, apple magical girl and lemon magical girl. But if you're going to be the equal opportunities anime that you should be, Yu-Gi-Oh, you should have a magical boy, a plum magical boy.
I don't think
marketing it like that.
Isn't Dark Magician technically the plum anime magical boy?
He's more of an eggplant. With these extra characters, you know it's marketing, you know it's brazen, you know it's lazy. You know, if you've got to try and fit one of your five a day in anime, then who am I to complain? So the plot for like the two and a bit hours this movie, it seems to drag in a lot of places. Like the whole backstory of the main antagonist, D.Va. I don't know if it's like D.Va were an E or D were an I. But it seems drawn out and kind of anticlimactic in the end. It's, like I say, it's the start of this movie, it's remnants of story, and in a strange way, it's like the characters themselves just wanted to be done and out of the way. And I'll go back to me last review on Digimon. You do feel like you're inconveniencing them. It's that thing, because Yugi, it's a long-standing series. It's got a huge, like, decades of history behind it. But that's what it is. It's history. It was big once, but
I've got to ask, is Yugi still part of this then? I had to sit through a couple of episodes of one of the new Yu-Gi-Oh! TV anime series.
Oh, no. They went into Yu-Gi-Oh! 5DS and then Zexal or
and that's
whatever.
My point. If he's not part of it anymore, then why is he called
Yu-Gi-Oh! The characters.
Yeah, thing is, if he's not part of it anymore, why is he called Yu-Gi-Oh? Pokemon, I can understand, because it's Pokemon, and Pokemon are the creatures. But Yu-Gi-Oh's clearly referring to this particular character here, who's no longer part of the series. So why is it still going by his name?
Well, it's kind of lazy.
Yeah.
that's basically it. It's became so big. I've got the same thing with Sunnycon. We called it Sunnycon to start off with. We could have called it Tooncon now we're in Newcastle. But nah, Sunnycon, we'll start with Sunnycon, we'll stick with Sunnycon. It's just thankful that we've got it in the middle of like June when it's actually sunny. So it actually has some relevance.
Hopefully.
Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh! Where it's like all the main characters are like Yugi, UC, You Fly, You So Fly, You So Money Supermarket.com. Just slightly related names. Right. So all the main cast, they've come to terms with the past. The whole shenanigans with the Millennium Puzzle, the Millennium Pieces, and whatnot, and they're all planning their next step in life. Tia wants to be a professional dancer, Tristan wants to be a pro duelist, and Yugi just wants to make games for a living. And in this movie, even though they're like the main characters, they were all really like background characters to the main protagonist of the movie.
Which is?
And the main protagonist is Seto Kaiba. Because I'm giving it my own interpretation on this, but he's coming to terms with a romantic homosexual interest in the Pharaoh. So I'm gonna have to label this movie as a romantic yaoi fantasy.
So
because it's all about Seto and his search for his beloved. You take Seto out of the equation, they're all getting on with their lives. Nobody gives a care, you know, that's done, it's in the past.
So Kaiba has a fascination with the Pharaoh.
My word, it's so romantic. You can call it subplot, but it's in your face. The guy has wood for the Pharaoh. He has such wood. I mean, you can look at some of the evidence that, I mean, Seto Kaiba, he's the world's leading inventor, even though the majority of his inventions are all card game stuff. Yet he's still got this giant global brand and fortune to match. You just look at how many times you can see, like, the giant KC emblazoned everywhere. The dude even built an orbital space platform into a KC shape. So, like you say, Kaiba, he's got his whole monogram of KC, Kaiba Corp, everywhere. Like McDonald's, they have, they've got the Golden Arches, but they don't really do an orbital restaurant on the edge of space.
Although they would if they could.
No, they shouldn't be investing in land and selling fast food. Should change the whole business model of McDonald's to inventing ways to draw cards faster. They'll be loaded. But shoddy business models and ego aside, anyone with such fame and wealth, you'd expect them to be progressing or just bathing in a bath of 1865 vintage Chateau Latif. But not Seto Kaiba, nah. This guy's got a bad for the Pharaoh. So sure, he's being beaten and hurt by the Pharaoh, but he still wants more. He's a glutton for punishment as Kaiba.
He's a masochist for the Pharaoh.
Oh, he is. Anyway, he's the dom. He's always the sub. But it goes so far as excavating the Millennium Puzzle to bring his beloved back, even though it fell into a non-discriminate, unguarded pit at the end of like the last movie. So,
is there actually any continuity from the actual old movies or not?
Well, yeah. The last movie, again, spoiler alert. The end of that movie was basically Pharaoh versus Yugi in a friendly duel cards game, duel monsters card game. And it was basically the Pharaoh to test Yugi to make sure that Yugi was ready to move on. Because the Pharaoh, he's got this afterlife to come back to. And Yugi obviously beat the Pharaoh fair and square. And they parted on, like, amicable terms. And life went on. Like I say, all went on. They've got their own lives. But it wasn't the end of it. And this movie is them really drawing this out. Like I say, forget the rest of the cast because the plot does absolutely nout for it. Yugi's only dragged into this because he was once the vessel for the Pharaoh. And besides that, the rest of the movie's just Kaiba doing everything within his power to bring back his one love.
Yeah, so, that was basically the opinion I got when I saw it as well.
That explains why Kaiba doesn't like Yugi too much, because Yugi used to be the vessel for the Pharaoh, but Kaiba wants to be the vessel for the Pharaoh.
Pharaoh's been inside of Yugi and Kaiba's jealous as hell.
Basically.
You do realise somebody's going to do this now as a fanfic.
It's probably already been done.
It's still like one of the most popular yaoi fanfics out there, isn't it?
Konami's made a canon right now. There's no need for fanfics. I mean, Kaiba as well, we know what's going on. It's very, very not subtle. There is a bad guy in this. He's typical evil, but he's trying to do the right thing mentality. And the thing is, the angle at the table for me is just background noise to the whole thing. To summarise the movie, it's just Kaiba wants to bring the Pharaoh back for one last hurrah, tries to rebuild the puzzle, but needs two pieces. He gets them, misses like 10 seconds of the Pharaoh when the Pharaoh actually does show up to save the day at the end, which is a proper cop-out. It's like, oh, Pharaoh's never coming back. He's never coming back. It is. But Kaiba doesn't know because Kaiba's away. So the whole movie just ends with Kaiba into the afterlife using technology to push through the boundary of death just so he can walk up to the Pharaoh in the Egyptian afterlife and have one more child's card game. And that, if that isn't true love, I don't know what is.
Is that what they want you to believe? I think I told you this before. I actually read the manga that went with this film. It was part of one of the Jump online things. Kaiba actually kills himself.
They got Romeo Juliet.
Yeah, basically, you know that the girl who kind of appears and disappears throughout the movie? I can't even remember her name. She's watching him in this little thing that he goes in at the end and she's going, if you use this, you will die. And he just goes, I don't care. I'm Kaiba, but I won't die. And she just goes, no, if you use this, you will actually die. And then at the end of the film, he uses and somehow appears in the afterlife.
Yeah, he just practically committed suicide to go and play a cards game with a pharaoh. Mokuba's going to be absolutely bloody loaded when that inheritance hits his bank. Maybe he'll do something better. Maybe there's another movie Konami can make out of this where Mokuba's like this proper suave card game playing gentleman. But he's being fractured. He's had a hard life. His brother was too hard on him.
No.
And maybe he's trying to make the world better because of it.
That's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is going to be like Full Metal Alchemist Conqueror of Shambhala again. Mokuba's going to go, I've got all this money. I need to go rescue Kaiba.
Yeah, that's more likely.
It's just like lemmings off a cliff at that point, isn't it? I've got to go into the afterlife. Well, how are you going to get there? In this little pod, you mean you got to kill yourself? No, it's technology. No, Mokuba, you got to kill yourself. Put it down, mate.
No, I found the solution. I know what the solution is. I've got this TV, right? And this TV just happens to be a gateway to the afterlife. I'm going to tie a rope round my waist.
Get to the light, Carol Ann!
Yes.
To be honest, considering this is Yu-Gi-Oh! And this is Kaiba, who in the film frequently decides that he doesn't want certain things to happen in the plot and just kind of says, no, this is not happening. I think he'd just get bored of the Pharaoh and decide he wants to come back and he'll just wander back in.
That's the thing, though. He's got the kind of arrogance and ego, like, well, you know I'm in the afterlife and I know I'm technically dead right now, but I'm gone home. They're just like, no, you're dead.
Let's be like Cartman, it's like, screw you guys, I'm going home.
But you are home, Mark.
What's that?
You are home.
I'm home, but Kaiba.
Maybe he wakes up and it's all a checkout girl's dream. I dare say the diehard fans who went to see it will be interested, but if me amazing review was sold it for you, get it yourself, but I hope this is from a personal point of view. I hope this is the last we see from Yu-Gi-Oh, at least from like the original casts. I mean, it's been a fun ride, but let's move on with life. You know,
can I just add one thing to the whole thing, to all of this at the end?
Oh, sorry. Add as much as you can.
All I want to point out is that there is no point in doing what they call them, the joke dubs of them.
The abridged.
Yeah, there's no point in doing it a bridge because the writing and some of the lines in this is actually stupidly hilarious. We went to the cinema and we were just laughing because it wasn't funny. It was just so bad it was funny.
Oh, don't say that. I know Eric Stewart's a proud man and he's... I'm hoping to get Dan Green to come to SunnyCon at some point, so I don't want to upset them. But Konami, the barrel has been scraped. I know there's a card game to sell. And I know that's probably never going to end ever. And they've got thousands of cards and it's just an extension of marketing now.
Yeah.
It's not so much an anime where they've put any effort into it. It's just a hyped up marketing campaign in the guise of entertaining anime. And I mean, if you've watched any other new series, like the one where he's on the bike, the one where he's like a younger kid, the other one where I haven't bothered to watch, but I assume it's crap. And you can only draw out something for so long. You know, just cut making the anime. Stop making the anime. Go back to the source. Go back to making the manga. You know, reboot yourself, sort of. Please don't reboot original Yugi. My God, don't do that. But, you know, start afresh. Start with the manga. Make it like a webcomic. Don't go overboard with it. Because watching the anime, like I say, it's had decades of history behind it. And it's now we're at a point where it should remain as history. You should remember it fondly rather than watching it. And when these movies come out, yeah, the hardcore fans come out and the curious observer will go to the cinema to watch it. But after I've had to sit there and watch 2.5 hours of that, it kind of angers us. It draws that kind of reaction from me because it's like, why didn't you just leave it where it was? Why do you have to bring this out? Why do you have to keep flogging this horse?
Well, speaking of flogging horses, it's an excellent segue. It's interesting that you mentioned Yu-Gi-Oh! Is nothing more than a marketing campaign now, because I kind of feel the same way about Boruto, Naruto the movie. And as much as I love the guys at Animatsu, as much as I love the guys at Manga Entertainment, Naruto has never been my thing. I've mentioned it before. Naruto lost me with like 5 episodes of the anime, and I was done. The main reason I was done was literally because they're saying ninja, 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 ninja. Right? Everyone's doing the ninja thing. I'm fine with that. That's no problem whatsoever. But then you have this kid, blonde, with a massive headband that's far too big for his forehead, and an orange jumpsuit, you know, bright orange. And he's running through the forest shouting Databayo, or believe it in the English dub for some reason. And I'm thinking, ninja, let me see. What do I know about ninja? Turns out, surprisingly, a lot. Number one, they didn't go running around the forest shouting Databayo. Number two, they never wore orange. And those are the two main reasons why it lost me. My suspension of disbelief automatically went, no. So I never returned to Naruto. And now I have with Boruto, which I'm sorry, but it is that Simpsons joke. My son is also called Bort. When I first heard about Boruto, what Naruto and Hinata having a kid. Now I know the characters in Naruto because everybody in anime has talked about Naruto to death, right? And I still can't believe that people rate it as one of the greatest anime of all time, one of the greatest manga of all time. Yeah. Anyway, Boruto, obviously. Naruto's son, Bort, I will call him from now on, because I respect the character that much. He deserves to be called Bort. He deserves to be bought and sold, you know, like a good little slave. Bort is Naruto's kid, and he is annoying as anything, and I will honestly admit, I would be much happier going back and watching all of Naruto and Shippuden, including all the fillers, than watch anything with Bort in it, right? Bort is... basically, you know how they have this whole thing. Naruto, Bort is a totally unbelievable character in this movie, right? He starts off going, oh, my dad, I hate my dad, blah, blah, blah. I hate my dad, hate my dad, hate my dad. My dad doesn't pay attention to me. Oh, woe is me. You know, Hinata's got the younger sister, whatever her name is, I've forgotten, Himawari. And so... you know, Himawari and Hinata are at home. Apparently nobody goes to school in this anime. School is not a thing.
Is this the movie version?
This is the movie, yeah. Nobody goes to school. Yeah. And I was like, is this during the summer holidays? But they're supposed to have the tune-in exam. So why aren't they studying? Where's the schoolyard? Oh, I forgot, they're ninjas. So their schoolyard is the forest. But Boruto, or Bort, is not, you know, he's not with everybody. He's the cool guy. You know, he might be the son of the 7th Hokage and the grandson of the 4th Hokage, which they forever reference, by the way. So, yeah, Bort hates his dad. Right, this is why I say he's an unbelievable character. Naruto, in the original series and in Shippuden, he basically struggled and fought his way to the top. As much as I don't like Naruto, I respect the length of time that it ran for. I respect the fact that all of that effort was put into the series, you know? It's not my cup of tea. Other people can like it if they want. That's fine. I respect the amount of blood, sweat, and tears that the characters were put through and had to shed in order to achieve their goals. I'm fine with that. So then they do this movie where you have a puny little kid who barely knows anything about the world, who's basically criticizing his dad, who, if I recall what I've read about the story, he literally fought everybody to get to the top. Yes or no? You guys correct me.
Yes, give up and
after Shippuden. the thing is with Naruto and Shippuden is the amount of character development.
Yeah,
it's if you're going into detail, Naruto is a thing because everyone develops. You get to watch them. It's almost as if they grow with you, which is a rare thing in anime.
Yeah,
because usually you don't actually get that step by step, bit by bit. You know, you've been there, you've been through the hardships, and like you say, Boruto. I know from the series, when you watch it, he's this ungrateful little shit. And you're sitting there and you're watching it thinking, you don't know what your dad's been through to get to where he is.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Boruto, being raised in that kind of environment, would actually know what his dad's been through. As soon as I started hearing, oh, I don't like my dad. I want to know my dad's weakness. I've got to beat my dad, blah, 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 blah. I'm thinking, you know the kind of crap that your dad had to go through. You know this because everybody knows this. Everybody in all of the five hidden villages knows the kind of crap that your dad had to go through to get to the top. Literally everybody. You'll have heard stories about it from everywhere, including your teachers. So I don't understand where this sense of overweening pride comes from. It doesn't make sense to me that a character in this kind of world would have this, especially Naruto's own son. And this is the other thing that annoyed me. Naruto grew up without parents, yeah?
Yeah.
And they've completely ignored the psychology of that. Completely ignored it. Because they're saying, oh, he's the Hokage now, so he's like the busiest person of all. Because he's got shadow clones, he can basically send a clone, and he thinks that's parenting. No, I think Naruto, having grown up without parents, would be very, very conscious of what it's like to grow up without parents. And so he would be doing his damnedest to make sure he was a good dad.
I think it kind of is, but it's the whole thing with Naruto is it's went from this old time where ninjas were needed and it was like, but there's this transition, more things are becoming electrical, transport, infrastructure.
Yeah.
Villages are starting to evolve into like cityscapes.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not all dependent on Naruto sorting things. He would have assistance, he would have help, he'd have people dealing with things. There would be systems in place as these things evolve. Yeah?
Yeah.
And well, you'd expect that, but it was just a small village. Yeah, so they might be short-handed. I can't imagine the breedings went down.
Well, it's a massive city now, not a small village. All five villages have kind of combined. There's no small village anymore.
Didn't, I can't remember what it's called, Tsunade have like an assistant or something like that when she was Hokage in the series?
Yeah, she did. The one with the little pig with the pearls.
And this is my point. They've completely ignored a lot of the infrastructure that they put into place with Naruto and with the history of Naruto and with the history of Naruto's world. You know, all of that world building seems to have gone out the window with Boruto or Bot. And that's what confuses me about this. Because there's this idiosyncrasy. Naruto basically has to show his true power in front of his son in order for his son to accept, oh, maybe my dad did have to struggle and fight his way to the top. Maybe there's more to my dad than I realized. And like, well, hang on. You have this revelation when he's literally protecting you from one of these great evils that suddenly appeared. Some guy to do
is this the
pills in the moon.
God demon ones.
Yeah, the god demon ones that have pills. They munch pills like some kind of cultivator from one of those Chinese Xianjia novels or something like that. I don't understand. It literally is, though, when I look at these god demon type thing ones, they literally are supposed to be the cultivators from China, because they're refining things into pills and eating the pills to get stronger. Like, oh, you basically ripped off someone else's mythology.
Yep.
So, yeah, you literally have ninjas versus cultivators, which could be a great setup for a story, right? And I can understand why it was used in Naruto. Got no problem with that. It's just, in this, it's crowbarred in. Literally crowbarred in. Starts off with Sasuke, and I was surprised. Is he missing an arm?
I
think they both lost an arm at the end or something, didn't they?
No, Naruto's got two arms. One of them's just covered in a bandage.
No, he's got bandaged up. I haven't seen it out of the bandage. I don't know whether it's like a phantom arm of chakra or...
No. I think his arm just got severely burned when he used the Rasengan or something like that. But
At the end, both of them were missing arms. Like, literally, the limb was missing, and they were both lying there with, like, the blood splatters as if they're holding hands. It was the whole, like, homoerotic ending that the fans, wanted.
Okay. Well, maybe it is made out of chakra or something like that, but they had, like, Boruto having to suffer the same thing. Now he's got a bandaged arm as well. Anyway, in terms of animation, it's pretty decent. It's got some great work during the action scenes. The final fight is actually pretty impressive in terms of the speed and the fluidity of the animation, but there are issues also. You can see clearly where somebody has cut a few corners. Voice acting, Japanese dub is fine. Not a problem with the Japanese dub. The problem all starts when you listen to the English dub. Since I've watched this movie, I've gone back and listened to some of the English dub of Naruto and Shippuden, and I've got to say, I'm not a fan, period. I don't think that the English dub for this quite works. If you're going to cast characters, then, as I've said before, spread your talent pool, get the right people, get the right cast. If you're casting a kid, don't use an adult, use a kid.
It's a weird thing because I've met Miley Flanagan and the voice of Naruto, and she's this stand-up comedian in America. And, I mean, you'll see her on Disney's Lab Rats and whatnot.
Yeah.
And very distinctive voice. And it's weird to say, like, oh, it's Naruto. But she's not interested in Naruto. You can tell. We were at a panel at one of the MCMs. I think it was MCM Glasgow. And we went there and somebody went, oh, so what if you had one of the Geki Genkai, which is like the eye powers, what would it be? And her response was, Geki Genkai, Geki Genkai. I'll have to get back to you on that. It's like, no, pet, you didn't know what he was going on about. You should have just said, no, I don't know. I know for voice actors, sometimes it's just a paycheck, but when you're in something as big as Naruto, you pay attention, you read that manga, because it's one of the main biggest selling animes of like recent history. And I think the view star again as Naruto for Bort.
Yeah.
And
see, this is the thing. The main reason it doesn't work for me at all is because you have a lot of jargon. You're talking about special moves that are in Japanese. You've got Rasengan is a prime example, right? And there's an intonation. When you listen to the Japanese dub, there's a way they say it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a way they actually pronounce these things. But then you listen to the American dub. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to call them English dubs anymore. I'm going to call them American dubs. So Funimation or whoever it is who's dubbing these. Sorry.
Yeah. Rasengan.
See, the way they pronounce it, it sounds like they're saying raisin gun. So,
yeah,
you know, Americans
ruin every language to touch.
Thing is, to me, it sounds like a gun that fires raisins.
That might be more cooler.
I was going to say chocolate-infused raisins.
Was there not one who had that ability?
Chocolate-infused no. Raisins was that.
No, chakra-infused raisins. See, I'm not working for Cadbury's here.
Chocolate... See, if somebody had a gun that fired chocolate-infused raisins...
Maybe if Willy Wonka was a ninja, then it might work. But
how do you know he wasn't? I saw Gene Wilder in that original movie.
Avant-garde cinema. With the thing with Boruto, and like I say, I haven't watched the movie. I have read the manga, and I have watched the TV series, Crunchyroll streaming, simulcast thingamajig that's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
And one thing that I never get with these is he's surrounded by the other like children and siblings of all the people that Naruto fought with. Was there just this one summer of love in the Hidden Leaf Village where everybody mated at the same time so these children could be born in that short space of time so they could all attend school in the same year?
Possibly. Don't know. Do you see what I mean about the classroom bit though? There's no actual There's no actual classroom. I've got no idea how old these characters are or if there's any difference in the ages at all.
They still have the academy. I think Konohamaru's like the one of the bigger teachers there.
Yeah.
But the thing that I hate about the academy part is they've took Shino Aburame, one of the most badass ninjas. The dude who's got parasitic bugs all over his body. He was practically undefeated throughout all of Naruto. And they've turned him into this clumsy-esque, like, who doesn't know how to control kids. This guy could control little microscopic parasitic insects which could crawl into your body and kill you dead, but he cannot handle a class of children.
Yeah. The best character in this of the children is actually Sasuke's daughter, is it Sarada?
Yeah.
She's the best character of the children. The thing that bugs me about this, right, Bort is basically a continuation of Naruto. It's like Naruto After type thing, right? Which was originally supposed to be Shippuden, but now it's Bort. And the thing that puzzles me about this is this desire to continue the story instead of just leaving it the hell alone at the end. We saw the results of this when, you remember the final Getsuga Tensho in Bleach?
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the end of Bleach. Right, and if it ended then, I would have been fine. You know, final Getsuga Tensho literally means final. That's it. Game over.
No more powers for Ichigo. That's it.
Yeah. Everybody else is dealing with it, but Ichigo then has to start living a normal life, not being able to see spirits or anything like that. And that would have made a really interesting story if they did a follow-up to that, right? If they wanted to continue Bleach as a follow-up, but focusing on Ichigo kind of adjusting to normal life and adjusting to reality, but knowing there's more to reality. That would have been interesting. I would have been interested in reading that, but they didn't do that. They just went, no, we want more of the Shinigami stuff.
Oh, was it the Quincy's? More Quincy's.
See?
Bring it to a head.
So sorry, we need more Quincy's.
No, don't, because I mentioned this before. I think it was to you, Tucky, when I got confused when they were talking about Quincy's and I started remembering Quincy M.E. from the old 70s.
That's what I was thinking of.
Dick Van Dyke.
No, not Dick Van Dyke. Quincy. Not Dick Van Dyke, because he's diagnosis murder. Oh. Quincy, as in Quincy. You know, the medical examiner.
It was Quincy Jones, is it?
No, Quincy. Do you not remember Quincy?
I remember a series called Quincy.
You're just saying Quincy.
That was what the show
Quincy.
Was called.
It was Quincy Jones.
No, not Quincy, Quincy Jones. Quincy M.E., yeah. That's what the show was called. It was just called Quincy.
There's too many Quincy's.
And I just, the thing is, when I first heard the term Quincy in Bleach, I was thinking, hang on, what? Quincy M.E.? What's he doing in this?
Well, no, like you say, with the continuation, it's because it sells. And yeah. Naruto was one of the biggest sellers. And the thing was, I had a huge sigh of relief when that manga finished. I read it and I thought it was a fine way to end it. You know, the war's over, world peace, you know, they've resolved the issues. And we've seen the deeper meaning of Chakra and everything, blah, blah, blah. He was infused with a beast. He overcame so many obstacles in life. He reached his goal, the end. That was a fine way to finish it.
Yeah. Everybody
but
was
now,
fine with that.
Like you're saying, they've continued with Bolt. And the thing that annoys me more about it is they're trying to really sell it as, that was my dad's story, but this is mine.
This is the point I wanted to make. Are these long-running titles more shonen than seinen, I should say? Because some of the long-running seinen titles and josei titles are actually still relevant even now. Stuff like Cooking Papa and that. Golgo 13 has been going on since, 1964, something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's been going on forever.
1968, sorry. So it's been going on forever. I think it's the third longest manga series in history. I think Doc Arbin is number two, and Kochikame is still number one at 200 volumes. But these long-running shonen series, are they relevant still? I mean, right now we're seeing a massive shift in the consumption of anime and manga. I mean, Attack on Titan changed a lot of things. People started wanting much darker storylines, for example. Hunter x Hunter made sure that we got much darker storylines with the Chimera Ant arc.
There's been an evolution in the past. I mean, like from the early 2000s onwards, we've seen an evolution in the use of like the internet, streaming has become this huge behemoth which nobody's really managed to harness well. All we know is Crunchyroll and Funimation, and the rest of us are just on for the ride watching them. And that's where we're seeing things like Amazon and Universal and the big boys of media distribution getting involved. And it's changing the attitudes of how fans can interact with manga and anime. And it's that thing where humanity has this short attention span.
Yeah.
And long-running series now, they'd have to be something really special, or they'd have to be marketed in such a way where it could fit in with modern-day society. Because we like things fast, and we like them now. And that's to some extent, we've seen an evolution with it where they've got the new Simu dubs, where the American dubs of anime is now released like within a week or two of the actual release in Japan, which is good to an extent, but it gives a lot more power than's needed to companies like Funimation.
Yeah.
Because they own all the voice studios, and if you want to be an anime voice actor, you either live in Texas or get stuffed. And it's unfair to the industry to that extent, because like we keep saying, there's a huge world out there of people who have different accents that will be more suited to some characters rather than hearing a more monotone, like the same voice actor voice over and over again. See Vic Mignogna. He's basically, besides Broly, he's the same voice in everything.
Yeah.
And his voice does not change. And I don't see the appeal. Met the bloke personally, you know, he's obviously seen, he's highly regarded in the anime circles, but speaking as a fan, he doesn't put that much effort into changing his voice.
Yeah, and this is true.
Whenever you hear Vic on, you know, it's like, oh, it's the typical Vic voice, that one same tone, like high pitchy sort of thing. But shorter attention spans for fans and longer running series, they'd have to try a lot harder now than when Naruto or Bleach or One Piece, you know, the weeb starter kits, the ones that really make it mainstream.
Yeah.
And they'll garner attention from around the world. But sometimes it's just how they're marketed.
Thing is, anime by its nature comes from manga. And manga is the source of any popularity that an anime has.
Yeah.
That's been true for all of anime's existence. And
anime is just really an advert for the manga. That's all it is. But they're trying to get you to buy that manga. They're trying to get you to buy that book.
Yeah, but the thing is, one of the problems that I'm seeing with the whole relevancy of long-running titles is that you have a lot of anime fans who watch anime but don't read manga. And that would probably describe, would it be fair to say, maybe 70% of anime fans don't actually read
more
manga?
Than that.
More than that?
Much more than that. I would say it's probably 80%.
Fine with that. I'm fine to go as high as that. I was being conservative with my estimate. But if we say 70 to 80% as a ballpark figure, now, when you have that kind of thing, that means that only 20 to 30% of your target audience are actually invested enough to continue with a long-running series. So you have these other titles, these other manga series that are just as good in terms of their concepts, in terms of their approaches, in terms of the number of chapters released, the public perception of them. Seven Deadly Sins, Nanatsu no Taizai, not the very, very fan service heavy version, which is Sin, Seven Deadly Sins. Seven Deadly Sins, right? That one, really solid fantasy series. Got some elements of fairy tale in there in terms of, you know, the fan service for the characters, but generally quite a solid series, you know?
Yeah, I've been reading that one recently. I got a few of the manga volumes digitally, and I was like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, wow, this is like really like Dragon Ball, like, it's kind of Dragon Ball, down to the designs, it's like very, very Dragon Ball, and a lot of the way it's pierced out and stuff like that.
It's kind of Dragon Ball meets medieval Europe with a bit of Arthurian legend thrown in. But then you've got something like Black Clover, which is, you know, the main character has no magic, his main rival is full of magic, they join the Magic Knights, and they both want to be the Magic Emperor, whatever it is, the biggest magical guy in the world, whatever. But that has some interesting ideas, some great characters, stuff like that. Both of them, well over 100 chapters. But they're not getting attention. Seven Deadly Sins had an anime adaptation, which really kind of flew under the radar. Nobody remembers it.
Because it went on Netflix, didn't it?
Yeah.
And Netflix didn't advertise it enough.
Yeah, but nobody really knows about it. No, if you talk to people about it, they go, didn't watch it, didn't even know it existed. Black Clover will probably get an anime adaptation. And
I think it is, isn't it?
Is it getting one?
I believe so.
This is the thing. There are other titles like that. There are lots of titles like that. Biomeat Nectar. I'm still waiting for the anime adaptation of Biomeat Nectar, which I think is a hugely relevant seinen title all about food.
Yeah.
And being destroyed by the food you create.
I mean, all we need to do is look at this season for stuff flying under the radar.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask most people, they'll be saying, what are you watching this season? I'm watching Attack on Titan. Some of them will be watching My Hero Academia.
Yeah.
And then there's other stuff. Then there's some really good stuff out this season, which is just flying under the radar because...
This is the thing.
People are just focusing on Attack on Titan. And it doesn't help that Crunchyroll and Funimation are kind of just going, yeah, Attack on Titan, this is the big thing this season. Everything else that we've got, yeah, just find it yourself.
That's another thing with the big guns there. Most people, like you say, they won't read the manga. They won't go out and research themselves. They'll get what's put in front of them and they will consume. It's a comfortable life being drip-fed what anime you want, what anime is out there. You know, you want something horror? Oh, look, Attack on Titan, it's mid. Eat it.
The thing is, I mean, Attack on Titan is a popular series and obviously a popular series is going to get spread around word of mouth in general. It's just that there is a lot of other stuff that's kind of out at the same time. I mean, I'm watching Recreators, that is easily my favorite anime this season. And I'm a huge fan of My Hero Academia as well. It's something completely different to what we're normally getting.
Thing is, I'd probably say My Hero Academia is one of the titles that is kind of in that long-running shonen series now.
What are we classing as a long-running manga? I mean, obviously, and if it's over 100 chapters or if it's been going on for how many years or what?
I think over 200 rather than 100.
Right, because we're seeing like Academia is a long-running one, whereas Academia's only on like 139 chapters.
Yeah, but the thing is, Academia will continue. There's certain titles where you can see it easily. It's going to continue. It's not going to finish. I don't class Attack on Titan as a long-running manga because it hasn't even hit 100 chapters yet.
They've got some good plot to it. I mean, it's starting to develop, but they've took a long time to get there because, you know, big visuals of, oh, Titans eating humans. And, I mean, if you read the manga, you'll know where the Titans come from, what the whole story is there. And it'll be interesting to see how they develop it, but you can't see it going on for up to 200 chapters. And you also get like some mangas where they can reach over 100, but then they go on hiatus for a bit.
Hunter Hunter and its permanent hiatus.
Yeah, that was disappointing. Especially thing is when they brought it back and they had the whole hype around it, and then it was like,
yeah,
it was disappointing. But like we're saying, it's you get whatever Crunchyroll shine the spotlight on, and you consume that, or you're going to have to do work, and humanity does not like to do work.
Yeah,
I mean some of the shows. I mean, me and Mark were just saying there some of the shows I get overlooked. I mean, I'm looking at them. You've got one of the classics, like Astro Boy, one of the classics, and this is like the prequel to Astro Boy. It's just been completely overlooked.
Do you know why that's been overlooked, though? At least over here, and even in America, is because Amazon stepped in, grabbed a load of these titles. In America, you have to have Amazon Prime plus an extra $5 anime subscription just to get Astro Boy and a few others. In the UK, we haven't gotten it at all.
Yep.
So that's why stuff like that's going under the radar, because people are dipping their toes in and basically locking people out of getting them, or locking people out of getting them in a way that they want to do it. You know what I mean?
You can look at like the upcoming animes, and you can see which ones that Crunchyroll's going to stick in front of people. The Welcome to the Ballroom, which is coming out, I think about 2 months' time for the summer schedule.
Yeah.
It's the ballroom anime. You know for a fact it's going to be memes. It's just going to be wall-to-wall memes of ballroom dancers.
It's almost as if it might be the new Yuri on Ice.
It won't be Yaoi on Ice because it's basically a male-female thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, that won't stop it. I've seen the trailer for it. They focus far more on the men. I didn't even realise there was a female in that.
I just want to bring something up. I've been looking at some of the manga that have 200 chapters, okay? And obviously the ones that we expect are in there. I mean, it's interesting that we haven't actually mentioned One Piece yet, but I think One Piece is now really just off to one side. You know, it's doing its own thing and doesn't care what everyone else is doing. So I think One Piece is just basically, it's just there.
One Piece is kind of like Dragon Ball and Kachikami, where you're kind of just like, oh, we can't complain about that.
Dragon Ball, as far as I'm concerned, Dragon Ball should die now. Dragon Ball should just disappear now. Yeah, and I'm sorry to all the Dragon Ball fans, but it's done.
It should, but it's not going to because it makes money. I've heard how much Sean Schemmel got paid for the voice of Goku and how much he continually he's made. And if the voice actor's making that much money, then the show must be absolutely raking it in.
Yeah, but
Dragon Ball and One Piece are the biggest IPs at the moment.
Yeah, do you not reckon that Toriyama wants to go and do something else?
Well, he did, and then they dragged him back into it. It's when they thought I was out of the game, but they keep dragging me back in.
Yeah, I know. I reckon he's going to... There's this movie that's coming out in Japan called Manga Jima, I think it is, or Manga Island. It's about these mangaka who get marooned on a deserted island where they draw a manga, and then they see a ship, so they light the manga on fire and basically summon the ship to take them home. Then they basically show this manga that they created on the island to a publisher who says it's crap. So they go back to the island, and then it turns into a Lord of the Flies bit. I reckon that's going to happen to Toriyama.
It's Toriyama on a desert island.
Yeah, that's the only way he can escape.
But it's one of those things, it's like Dragon Ball, it's going back to the ones who did Naruto, and obviously the guy who's done Fairy Tail, who's basically announced a week after confirming it's going to end in 12 chapters or whatever it is. Yes, there was going to be a Fairy Tail sequel, because of course it is.
Given how many spin-offs there have been of Fairy Tail already.
Exactly.
You have different manga like that, but those are the ones that everybody knows. But I think people would be shocked to find that something like Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle would be classed as a long-running series. Daku and Alice would be classed as a long-running series. I adore that series, by the way.
One that's just actually started on Crunchyroll?
Gaku and Alice is an old series. I think that Gaku and Alice is one of those hugely underrated manga and anime. I thought the anime was cute and quirky and sometimes serious, sometimes sweet, sometimes funny. Mm-hmm. Solid 8, by the way. Cage of Eden. Everyone's forgotten Cage of Eden existed because, yeah, okay, it was Cage of Fan Service at times, but, you know, in general, it actually had a solid story.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We were talking just before we recorded that series that seems to be selling stupidly well in Japan, but everyone forgets about it. Kingdom.
Yeah.
That's a long-running one now, isn't it?
Kingdom is definitely a long-running one. And that's just Japan we're talking about. We're not even talking about stuff that's coming out from China or Korea.
Yeah.
Or Thailand or Taiwan or any of the other countries in the region. We're just focused on Japan. Did you know there's an anime series, or a Chinese animated series, that is basically Sword Art Online, has all the hallmarks of Sword Art Online, but isn't trapped in a video game kind of thing, but is trapped in a video game kind of thing, but is superior to Sword Art Online in pretty much every single way?
Well, there's a lot of series like that, but...
No, this one's different.
Not that specific one.
No, this one's different. This one's called The King's Avatar.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of that.
If you get a chance, because I've been reading the novel, and the novel is really good. The author really understands video games, understands gaming, understands the gaming culture, understands the jargon, understands what competitive gaming is. So, yeah, that gives it a big, big plus in my book, because it adds authenticity to it. Whereas Sword Art Online is like, oh, yeah, he was one of the beta testers, but he knows nothing about this game.
They're doing crossovers now with Axel World and
Sword Art Online. I know.
You know what the reach and when they do crossovers. I mean, you've seen the Supernatural Scooby Doo thing. But
the thing is, Axel World and Sword Art Online are actually in the same universe. They're actually in the same timeline. Axel World is set in the future. Sword Art Online is something that happens in history, and the reason why you know that is because in Axel World, when the main character, I forgot his name. When he's looking through the old forms of Neural Link, you have the Nerve Gear as one of the initial forms of Neural Link before technology evolved, and now it's just a chip that goes on into the back of the skull, you know, with a little port. That's basically what confirmed it, and then it was confirmed by the author that he's supposed to be kind of the same universe.
Oh, that's cool. I've got a question for you guys. Since we're talking about long-running series and stuff like that...
Yeah.
How do you feel about long-running series that have been around forever? And, like, we'll see One Piece, because that's been going on for 20 years.
Been around forever, but no one
either
knows
are them. Consistently good.
Yeah.
Or they reinvent themselves over and over again. So
there's the longer, long-running ones.
Well, I'm thinking stuff like, obviously, One Piece, we'll leave that one to one side, but I'm thinking stuff like JoJo's or Gundam, where they've been going on for forever and a day, but there's, like, that many different parts to them, and they're all pretty different.
Well, JoJo's technically does fall under the long-running series category, but I don't think you can class Gundam in the same way, because Gundam is lots of different parts, and some of them are completely unrelated to each other, whereas there's an ongoing narrative thread that runs through JoJo's, but there isn't that in Gundam.
Yeah.
It's more of a linear plot with JoJo's.
Yeah.
I mean, with... If you look at like the bigger long running ones, most of them have like the same consistency. I mean, you look at Detective Conan, Case Closed.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's always had the same base plot all the way through. And I mean, that's been going since 1996.
Yeah.
Some other ones like the long running child ones like Crayon Shin-chan.
Yeah, it's been going forever.
That's been going since 1992. Doraemon.
Doraemon,
Anpanman.
Oh, God, Anpanman. I forgot about him.
Yeah, he's Prince Makaru as well.
Yeah,
it's like the really childish ones. The animation's not really anything to write home about, but it's got that consistency, and it's been going. I mean, some of these have been going since the '80s, you know. Yeah. And
yeah,
if they had a manga version for them, the manga would probably be running in the hundreds, not 200 plus, but we're talking like 500, 600, 700 plus. I mean, look at Hajime no Ippo, over 1,000 chapters, but it's still not one of the longest running series. It's a long running series, but it's not near the top. Just to give you an idea, right? In terms of volumes, by volume, I'm just gonna go this. From the top, these are the top 10 manga series by volume, right? At 200 is Kochikame. Mm-hmm. At 197 volumes is Doc Harbin. Kochikame, by the way, was 1,960 chapters.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, Golgo 13 is 184. Still got ongoing. Doc Harbin is still ongoing as well. Number four, with 150 volumes, is Menami no Teo, which is ongoing. That started in 92. Then Cooking Papa, with 140 volumes, 1,291 chapters, still ongoing, started in 1986, 85, 86. Grappler Baki, which, if you're talking about martial arts or combat manga, Grappler Baki is hugely underrated. Loads of people don't remember it. 137 volumes, 1,011 chapters, started in 92, and still ongoing. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, 118 volumes, 905 chapters, ongoing, as we know. Hajime no Ippo, 117 volumes, 1,163 chapters, started in 1990, still ongoing. Nijite Monogatari, 111 volumes, ended in 2012. So literally from the first, and then Oshinbo, 111 volumes, started in 83, 84, still ongoing. So from the top 10, you have two that have finished.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them are still ongoing.
Out of the top 10, we've got two that are actually really incredibly well known as well.
Which two?
Well, I would say JoJo's and Ippo.
Golgo 13.
Oh, yeah, that.
Golgo 13 and Kochikame. I'd say JoJo's is well known amongst fans at the moment because JoJo is kind of, it's one of those flavor of the month things. In the Western world, yeah, JoJo's. Ippo as well.
Yeah.
But if you look at, say, older fans, or you go to Japan, then you'd say Golgo 13 and Kochikame are more well-known.
Well, there's other ones, like where the ones where it's not actually manga, but the animated series as well. Like say, there's more childish ones. There's a show called Mrs. Seize.
Oh, Sazae-san, yeah.
7,466 plus episodes.
Yep.
Been going since 1969.
Yep, Sazae-san has I think that
beats like Coronation Street and that. And that's just an average Japanese housewife.
Yeah, well, I don't think it beats Coronation Street because Coronation Street has been going since 1965 or something like that.
I'd be interested to see if it's got over 7,000 episodes, though. It's got to be close.
Easy.
It's got to be close to it.
Well, we'll say it's definitely beat Hollyoaks.
Oh, everything beats Hollyoaks. Anyway. We're pretty much at the end. We'll call it time there. But final thought from you guys. Are long-running franchises like Naruto, Bleach, One Piece, those sorts of titles, are they still relevant?
I think as long as they are good or they're maintaining a good consistency of being decent, then yeah, that's fine. If they're struggling, if they're kind of just waffling on or if they're being brought back for the sake of being brought back to sell stuff, then no, they have to just get rid of them.
What if they've not been brought back? What if they just kept going?
If they just kept going, like One Piece or stuff like that, yeah, letting them keep going. At the end of the day, if they are producing good content, let them keep going.
I'd have to say long-running anime, manga, no. It's no longer relevant in this day and age. Where we want everything like 12 episode bursts every season. You've got to make memes of it. And you've got to move on to the next meme bait thing. It's the long running series. It's going to become a rare occurrence from now on because we consume so much and because it's there and it's ready. It's streamable. We're gonna get lots of like 12 episodes, 24 episode series, and sometimes not even a season two for some of them. And it's gonna get to that point where you can see like they might have hundreds of chapters in the manga, but if it doesn't sell, it's not gonna make the cut in the anime, and it's gonna be less and less reliant on longer series. That's why we're seeing the likes of Dragon Ball Z being resurrected from the dead. Because it sells, it's a proven marketing technique,
yeah.
And there's nothing there to take its place. So yeah. Dragon Ball's come back. They say One Piece will keep going until that's over. And once that's over, do we think it's really going to be over? Because I doubt it. It makes money.
No, that'll not stop for a long time.
With today's society, with the evolution of the industry, and with the high demand and the marketing, it's going to be difficult for a long-standing series to reappear. Especially when they only go for the safe options. The companies, the execs, Kadokawa, all of the Japanese distribution companies, they'll go for the safe options. That's why we're going to see a lot of the old stuff recycled, most likely, because it is the safe option. That's our future.
See, I don't think it's the safe option. I'm kind of with you on this one, Tucky. I don't think that long-running series, I don't think that new long-running series are relevant. I think that something like One Piece, where they're still going with the story, I think that's relevant, but within a niche, within a bubble. Kind of thing.
That's the anime community, though. There's lots of little bubbles. Everyone's got their own thing.
See, here's the thing. I am kind of with you on they're not relevant, but again, there's a qualification to that. See, I think that long-running titles in terms of anime are no longer relevant. I totally agree with you. It is consumerism at its finest. It's basically attention span and consumerism. People want those bite-sized chunks. And that's what's going to be used from now on. See, I found this quite interesting. I spoke to a bunch of friends online from various parts of the world who are old anime fans like me. And I found it quite interesting that all of them seem to have ended up like me, where we explore, we find out, we discover things for ourselves, but we don't really use anime as any kind of marker to tell us what we should be reading. And what we found is that we read a lot more now, whether it's manga, light novels from various parts, Chinese novels, Korean novels, Japanese novels, whatever. We read a lot more now. And if we watch an anime version of something, we'll enjoy it, but we won't use it as marketing. But that's what we've seen happening, is that they're using anime a lot more as a marketing promotion tool. Oh, go read this. This exists. You should go read it because look at the shiny anime that we made for it.
Yeah, now, you want that's the rest why we're of the saying, story? With home releases, yeah. With them, it's more, oh, get your collector's edition, get your day one editions of this. And it's becoming more money orientated. And especially when we see like big distribution, like Universal, Sony Pictures, when they get involved because there's money. And they don't go anywhere without like a big wad of money being wafted somewhere.
Thing is, that's only part of it. That counts for original stuff and some of the really popular stuff. But when it's an anime, I mean, look at Tsukasuka, which is airing right now, right? There is no clearer advertisement for you to go and read the light novels than that series. That series is basically saying, you want the full story? You want it in more detail? You want it in more depth? Go read the light novels. Go buy the light novels. Go read them.
Yeah, I mean, I know ReZero kind of did that at the end. They kind of just went, to be continued in the light novel. And it was kind of just like, yay! And everyone's just like, but the light novel's not out yet.
Exactly.
But it's still advertising just to see, yeah, if you want more of this, go read the light novel.
I mean, the same thing
happened. People have got to be herded into it, though. And people, you like say, they're like sheep. You've got to herd them into it.
Actually, you don't.
To give them that push.
You don't, not anymore. Because this is, again, one of the things that I've seen, that we've seen changing. It's unfortunately not changing as much here in the UK. But if you look at it on kind of a global scale, it is gradually changing. Right now, there are more groups doing translations of light novels. These are fan translations because you just can't get them. But now the publishers have started jumping on the bandwagon and are actually doing official translations. They're buying the rights and releasing them in America. And you can get the imports in the UK because it's a book. You know, there are publishers here in the UK who are looking at the Eastern markets and looking at light novels and web novels and stuff like that, that they can bring over here because they know there's a market for it. And the market is slowly changing. And part of the reason why it's changing is because people no longer have the time in their busy lives, I should say. I'm being sarcastic when I say busy. It's that attention span thing. And weirdly enough, the thing that holds people's attention the longest is reading. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. So now it's feasible to actually use an anime to publicize a long-running manga series or a long-running novel series. Now they can actually do it. And the weird thing is, it's working.
Yeah. Bringing us up to the point that Ray discussed last week, for some series, it's far more cheaper to buy all the manga volumes than it is to buy all the anime.
Exactly. That's one of the things that's driving people. They'll buy the anime series if it's a 12-episode series, but then they'll just go buy all the manga volumes or buy the light novels and have that all together on their shelf. They know what the full story is, so do they need to watch any more releases of the anime? Let's put it this way. How many One Piece fans who read the manga continue watching the anime?
I actually don't. I mean, I've watched the anime when they released the DVDs, but I haven't watched the anime, like, a new episode since, I don't know.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. It was before the stuff that they've even got on DVD. So it must have been like Thriller Bark.
Yeah. And this is what I mean. The weird thing is that manga and light novels are starting to do real damage to anime.
Mm-hmm.
To anime
especially,
sales.
Especially when the figures of companies have put all their marketing focus on anime only.
Yeah.
And that'll be their downfall.
Yep. You're exactly right on that. And this is one of the reasons why I said it last week, and I'll say it again today. I've got huge respect for companies like MVM, who basically go their own way. They look at stuff that's flown under the radar. They want to get the licenses for those older stuff that nobody wants to release anymore. They want to get the licenses for those. I've got huge respect for them for doing that because everyone's so focused on what's popular, but not what's good. Anyway, we are at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for another week. We will be back next week, possibly with normal service, possibly with a twisty episode like today. We're not sure. I may rant, Tucky may scream, Mark may sob quietly in a corner because, you know, it's the end of the week and he's got no money because he's got cons coming up and he's spent it all on anime and he's wondering where his paycheck went.
This next month is absolutely crippling us and haven't even started it
yet. See what I mean?
You're welcome.
Not just you, it's all the anime. It is all the anime. They're releasing all of the series at the same time.
Yeah. Jeremy, it's your fault.
Does Jeremy listen?
He's there. We know he is.
Anyway. If you want to listen to more of our episodes, you'll find them on Audio Boom and on iTunes. If you are listening on either of those services, then subscribe. You'll keep up to date with all of our latest episodes. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. And if you want to get involved, either as a writer or you fancy being on a show, do get in touch with us. studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. It's really easy to get involved. If you want to get involved on the show, it's very, very straightforward. We'll have a chat with you, talk you through what we do, what we're about. So don't be afraid. You know, we're all friendly people here, except maybe Tucky.
No, I hate everyone.
Shh, don't say that, Tucky. We can give them all of the Yu-Gi-Oh! DVD.
Yeah.
Give them Rock Lee.
Yes, you too could be a ninja pal. So, yeah, that's us done for this week. We'll see you all next week. Until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Goodbye. 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 Goodbye.